8:30, 55KRC, the talk station. A very happy Tuesday to you. Brian Thomas right here in one of the sites I regularly use to prepare for the program. You won't find it if you do it a Google search, as Joel Pollack knows, senior editor-at-large and in-house counsel for Breitbart. Bookmark it, Breitbart.com. Joel, welcome back to the program. It's always a real pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk really quick. I know we were here to talk about the Supreme Court pick, the logistics. Trump's going to move forward with it. We seem to get that indication. Obviously, Democrats are apoplectic. They are completely lost their minds, basing it on 2013. But I just want to ask you, as an expert on, you know, world affairs and someone who is very interested in the Middle East, Donald Trump is not getting a whole lot of love or credit for the deals he worked out with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, recognizing Israel as a trading partner. I mean, this is historic, is it not, Joel?
Yes, it is, of course. And it's going to create the foundation for massive prosperity in the region. Israel is the commercial and industrial center of the Middle East. We don't usually think about it that way because we think of the Middle East as oil and so forth, but Israel is a center for innovation, for investment, for trade, for tourism. And you connect that to Dubai, which is a big hub in the United Arab Emirates. It's a major travel point. It's become a tourist destination as that country diversifies beyond oil and gas. And if you combine those two economies, you bring Tel Aviv together with Dubai, you're going to have a real nexus for innovation, for investment, and I think people are going to see benefits in the short term, but also over the long term. You're going to see massive trade and travel between the two, and it's going to be a very, very lucrative arrangement that benefits everybody in the region.
Indeed, and it looks like more countries are lining up, my understanding, Saudi Arabia, and that is one of them, and that would be a real coup. I want to keep that in context, though. Is it not in their security interests to recognize and trade with and cooperate with Israel? Because I have to imagine the sheikhs in Saudi Arabia are probably quaking in their boots a little bit, if not being shaken down by terrorists. The ISIS type folks, they don't like the Saudi government situation at all, do they? So Saudi Arabia could be threatened by very radical fundamentalists, correct?
That's correct. But the main threat to Saudis and the Emiratis and the Bahrainis and all these other Gulf states is Iran. And
yes,
they have joined together with Israel to present a united front against Iran. And that's where the Trump administration deserves credit. The Obama administration was effectively siding with Iran and making Iran stronger through this Iran nuclear deal that didn't really solve the nuclear problem, but
right,
gave Iran sanctions relief and a bunch of cash. And what Trump has done by standing up to Iran and imposing sanctions, ending the deal, is he has emboldened these Arab leaders to reach out to Israel. And what's going to happen is, as more and more countries come on board and the circle of prosperity widens, you're going to see pressure on the Palestinians, first of all, to make a deal with Israel, but also on Iran. And you're also going to see the Iranian people start to ratchet up the pressure on their own government because they don't want to be left out of this. The Iranian people are very tired of their government. They're an innovative people. They're a dynamic people. And they don't want to be left out of this regional prosperity. They're also facing huge problems internally with economic slowdowns, with water shortages, and so forth. Those are problems Israel can solve, and a relationship with Israel can solve. So I think you're going to see real positive change, provided Trump's reelected. If Trump is not reelected, then you go back to the old status quo. Joe Biden's going to bring all the old advisors from the Obama era who messed everything up, and you're going to see problems reemerge. But I do think that if Trump is reelected, it's going to set the region on a path to progress.
Indeed, I share your optimism on that one. And insofar as Iran is concerned, there's a lot of people that remember what it used to be like before the revolution when they went theocracy. It was a Western, very modern country before they took over. So there's a lot of folks that still remember those days, much in the same way there are Cubans who remember pre-Castro. They're not a whole lot much, but they remember fondly what it was like. Anyway, Joel Pollack onto the Supreme Court. It looks like Donald Trump's going to move forward. He's promised it. Mitch McConnell says we're moving forward. Mitt Romney and Murkowski, I think, currently sitting on their hands, playing it close to the vest. But they say they've got the votes. This is it. They're going to move forward?
I do think they'll move forward. forward. I'm not sure they'll get it done before the election. They could. And I think what was very smart was for Mitch McConnell to say very early that Trump's nominee will get a vote on the floor of the Senate. I think that removed a lot of the drama out of this. The longer he waited to say that, the more pressure that Democrats would have been able to put on Republicans. And I think by McConnell just coming out and saying it, he really reframed the conversation. Now you have judges already conferring with the president, people who could potentially be appointed. And there are charges back and forth of hypocrisy. You've got Democrats saying that Republicans blocked Merrick Garland in 2016, and Republicans pointing out that Democrats insisted that the president's nominee get a vote, even in a presidential election year. So you're going to have that charge flying back and forth. But what is very interesting is that Joe Biden continues to hide his list of potential Supreme Court nominees. He said in June he was working on a list. Donald Trump released a list earlier this month, a new list, in addition to the one he released in May 2016. So we already know who the pool of candidates is for Donald Trump for any one of these Supreme Court vacancies. Joe Biden keeps dodging that question, keeps trying to explain why he shouldn't be compelled to produce a list, why people should just vote and trust him and know that he's going to pick someone good. You know, that sort of thing doesn't really fly with voters, and I think that it's a losing argument. I can't see him sustaining that argument for much longer. But
I can't either. I mean, he was asked just the other day, reporting from Kyle Olson for Breitbart, should voters know, a reporter asked him, should voters know who you're going to appoint? Biden's response, no, they don't, but they will if I'm elected. They'll have plenty of time. So he's saying, I'm not going to let anybody know before the election. This is a critical point in the election, the Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing about that is Biden has said, well, the only presidential candidate ever to do that is Donald Trump, you know, as if that's a bad thing. I mean, Trump broke the mold on that. And I remember at the time, Democrats were saying, I wish our side would do that. I wish our side would go into the election making specific commitments to the voters, because then we can hold them accountable once they're in office. When you've made those kinds of commitments, that was a deal Trump offered to the conservative base, saying, look, I know you don't consider me really one of you, but let me make a deal with you. I'm going to pick my judges from a list that you suggest, that you endorse. And he's done that. And I think that's the big success of the Trump presidency from a political perspective, is that he's retained that connection with his base. He's provided, he's come through and delivered on his end of the deal.
He has done that. And my reaction to anybody who keeps it that close to the vest and isn't honest about it recognizes that there might be a lot of political backlash to anybody he might name. Like, see, there you go. Judicial left-wing activists, and that's the last thing we need, particularly, Joel, as you are paying attention to, the court decisions on voting that have so far come out of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Coincidence? I think not. Extending, even though the law does not provide for it, the counting of ballots beyond the election day, as far as 2 weeks out? Whoa. Judicial activism, something to be fearful of. Joel?
You know, the counting isn't even the worst part of these judicial decisions. The worst parts are the parts that allow things like ballot harvesting, which is going to be allowed in Michigan, where other people can bring in as many ballots as they want during certain periods of time. Or in Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State has told county election officials they don't have to match the signatures on mail-in ballots to the signatures on file. These are destroyed safeguards, basically. The courts are destroying the safeguards to prevent election fraud, and they're creating incentives for people to cheat.
Incentives for people to cheat?
Another question, but again and again, the courts are saying, well, we haven't seen this kind of cheating before in an election, so we're not going to intervene to stop it. But that's precisely the point. We've never been in this circumstance before at all. We've never seen mail-in voting on this sort of scale. So how can we prevent that kind of cheating? How can we prevent that kind of fraud? Our judicial system is set up so that we don't see cases that don't involve actual damages, things that have happened to someone in the past. We don't really have a judicial system that blocks things going forward quite as much. So that's to the president's disadvantage here, and we'll have to see how it plays out in Michigan and Wisconsin. But you're right, they're targeting these states because these were the swing states in the 2016 election, and Democrats want to do their very best to stuff the ballot boxes. And so Republicans are going to have to turn out in force to prevent that from making a difference.
Well, regardless of the outcome of this election, let's say Harris gets elected, and I say that joking and advisedly, but Donald Trump's going to have one hell of a legacy insofar as the judiciary is concerned, and I don't think anybody can contest that, and it will be a lasting legacy, Joel Pawlak.
Yeah, I think we're going to see the legacy of Donald Trump go beyond so many of the areas of policy that you and I even have talked about this morning. I mean, Trump has made a tremendous impact on this country, and whether he leaves office in 2021 or 2025, he's going to leave an example, I think, that future presidents will have to follow in several areas. And if they don't, you know, we'll be reminding them. But
yeah,
he's been so successful in doing things for the first time that no president has done before that I think we're going to change our idea of what the presidency should be and what it should achieve. And a lot of the negative reporting you hear from the mainstream media about Donald Trump is about things he said or the way he does things differently. You know, you hear reports about chaos in the White House. Well, I prefer to have a White House where people are fired if they're not doing their jobs rather than a White House where people treat their jobs as their personal property.
Amen.
Which is what happened under previous administrations. So I think that, again, win or lose, Trump's going to have a huge impact, but obviously that impact is greater if he wins because I think the logjam of Democratic hysteria will be broken to some extent. They'll still be crazy and upset that he's president, but I think there may be new leadership in the House.
Ooh.
There'll be internal conversations among Democrats as to whether burning the country down before an election is a good idea or a bad idea. You know, you'll actually see some effort to put the Democratic Party back on a more moderate path, even though I think the moderates are going to lose again in 2024 inside the Democratic Party because the Bernie Sanders wing has now twice seen its candidate given short shrift. So I think they're going to probably nominate a more left-wing presidential candidate in 2024, whether they win this election or not. But I think you start a process, at least, of the Democrats getting back to sanity if they lose this year.
Hope you're right. Joel Pawlak, senior editor-at-large and in-house counsel for Breitbart, BREITBART.com. Bookmark it. You'll be glad you did.